podcast called Living the Stream comes to you each week. Streaming recommendations during NFL season, it's not just tongue-in-cheek. Quarterback, defense, tight end recommendations based on opposition matchup. Here are your podcast hosts, J.J. Zacharyson and Danny Carter, Living the Stream.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of Living the Stream. I'm J.J. Zacharyson, the late-round quarterback, and I'm joined by my always lovely co-host, Denny Carter. Denny, how's it going, buddy?
Hey, not bad, JJ. I just wanted to clear up one thing before we get going here, I had very little to do with Nate Burleson's car crash and broken arm today. So I think it's very unfortunate. I definitely didn't call some guy named Sal in Detroit to have him sell Nate Burleson a piece of pizza, which he then put on his passenger seat and slid off and then had a car crash and broke his arm. And the fact that I own Ryan Broyles in two dynasty leagues means nothing. I just want everyone to know that. Okay?
Yeah. I was just on the Two Mugs pod, and I was saying that I think that you were the one who planted the pizza in his car.
Yeah, no, I mean,
It was actually not him wanting to get a slice of pizza to see how it tastes, but actually the surprise factor that there was a nice fresh box of pizza in his passenger seat.
Right. I'll just say that I wasn't directly involved. That's all I can say about the situation.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. So, listeners, if my voice is a little raspy tonight, it's because I've watched two consecutive Steeler losses live, and I've yelled a whole lot at Todd Haley as a result. So I'll be ranting about that later, though. So I got to see them lose to Cincinnati here in Cincinnati last Monday, and I went back to Pittsburgh, visit some friends and family, and I watched them get destroyed in the first quarter by the Bears. That was fun.
That sounds fun. I thought of you while I watched Team Tressman just dissect that defense early on.
Oh man, that was rough. All those turnovers, man. Mm. But it's a new week. 0-3, but the Pirates just clinched a playoff berth. I can't even imagine what Pittsburgh would be like if the Pirates were still bad.
Oh man.
Whew. Be rough.
It'd be a sports wasteland.
Yeah, it really would. But anyway, so let's go over our picks from last week, some of our streamers, and then we'll dive right into week four, first of the bye weeks.
Sure.
Craziness. All right, defense. We had the Jets, who played the Bills, the Saints, who played the Cardinals, and the Vikings, who played the Brian Hoyers.
Yes.
All of the defenses, though, ended up playing pretty well. Do you want to – maybe not the Jets. I don't remember quite well, but how did they perform?
Well, the Vikings ended up with 7 points in standard leagues. I mean, that's not what we were really looking for with – Richardson being traded in the middle of the week and Hoyer starting and everything. But something I mentioned in my fake football column this week is the don't give a crap factor can play a big role in fantasy. And obviously the Browns are probably going to operate like that for most of the year. I mean, the fake field goal, they had a fake punt that went for 30 or 40 yards. They were playing like they had nothing to lose because, shockingly, they have nothing to lose. So, I think that kind of bit the our choice of the Vikings a little bit, but they still finished as the 11th highest scoring fantasy defense of the week, and the Jets were one slot above that. You know, so that's not too bad. I mentioned the Giants in last week's pod, and
oh, that's what it was. Okay,
and that was cause for at least one crying shower. So that's that didn't go well. Obviously,
let's just pretend you picked the Panthers.
That's right. Pick the Panthers, right?
Yeah.
So
very nice.
Yeah, it was. Overall, I was pleased. I mean, you know, the Packers and Ravens led the way, but that was mostly because of kind of incredibly fluky touchdowns that we can't predict and shouldn't try. So, that happens, but I'll take a top 12 defense off the wire.
Yeah, totally. I mean, that's kind of what we, that's like our baseline, right?
In a way. Yeah. If I can't spot a top 12 defense in a given week, then I'm pretty disappointed. So 10-11 with the Jets and Vikings. I'm pleased. I'm not thrilled with it, but I'm pleased.
Yeah, could have been a lot worse. At quarterback, I had Alex Smith, Sam Bradford, and Andy Dalton, who, interestingly enough, finished right next to each other in rankings. So you had Alex Smith get 14, Andy Dalton get 13.7, and Bradford get 13.6, or some variation of that. Probably my worst week streaming quarterbacks in a while. A lot of mediocrity. But again, you know, you look at some of the guys. One of the guys that ranked ahead of them was Tavarius Jackson.
Right.
One of them was Brian Hoyer. So a lot of the guys, even a Geno or an EJ Manuel, who actually, I mean, I will say, it's kind of crazy, but the number fire projection machine had those two guys really high entering the week, and I couldn't see it, and then that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And it's crazy how that worked out.
Yeah.
But how the algorithms know more than we do. The machines. But you know, there's so many quarterbacks that you know, weren't even starting on other fantasy teams, to the point where, you know, if you put up 14 points last week because it was that bizarre of a week, you know, you were only 7 points off the fifth or sixth quarterback to begin with. And then not only that, some of those guys were unstartable, like I said. So could have been a lot worse. It was a really, really weird fantasy week. I think that was definitely a common trend among fantasy analysts in general, you know, preaching that on Twitter. But
yeah,
could have been worse, but could have been a lot better.
I agree. And I'll say real quickly on the quarterbacks, I think that two, you know, pretty big takeaways for streaming quarterbacks from week three was that we should really target the Minnesota and San Diego secondaries. Yep. Because the Chargers and Vikings can't cover anybody. They're getting just destroyed by any kind of passing attack, even the Titans, you know. So
yeah.
I'm all for targeting them for the rest of the year.
Yeah, totally. And then our tight ends that we had our boy Charles Clay, Kobe Fleener, I believe you mentioned Vance McDonald because I made fun of his name.
Yeah.
And then I threw Tyler Eifert in there just as a boomer bust play. He only caught a ball, I think.
Mm.
So I, you know, last week wasn't tremendous with our tight end picks, but again, it was just you look up and down the tight end board. Obviously, Jordan Cameron and Jimmy Graham did their thing,
right?
But it wasn't really a huge week for tight ends that you know, are plug and play guys. I'm looking down the list right now. You have Scott Chandler, I mean, Zach Miller, Luke Wilson, who I believe was an old school.
yeah.
Gavin Escobar, Jordan Reed, Jordan Reed, obviously. But Jordan Reed only scored 7.5 points.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he's like a top 10 option at tight end. It's just the way that the week went.
Yeah, it was tough. And I will say Charles Clay, I mean, I know the guy. He had 40 yards on four catches. So, you know, he didn't exactly light the world on fire. But you know, he had the same number of points as Jared Cook, and he had one less point than Greg Olsen. So it was, God, last week was just miserable for tight ends.
Yeah, it was pretty rough. And I think, I mean, it's gonna be that way, I think, throughout the season a little bit. I think that we're gonna get a better idea of, I just stuttered like crazy.
Yeah.
A better idea. of who are the tight end ones, because right now there are only a handful. There's only, you know, Jimmy Graham, Jordan Cameron, Julius Thomas, mm-hmm. Witten, and that might be it, that are true plug and play guys at this point in the season.
Yeah, and well, and I think that there is you know, good news for people who chose to stream the position, and again, that means that, you know, if you have Julius Thomas that you drafted in the 12th round, I'm, you know, we're not saying, you know, stream if you have Julius Thomas, because I see some of that on Twitter, and that's incorrect. But that does mean that there are quite a few options. Not that you'll ever be able to say, hey, I'm going to plug and play Luke Wilson because he's going to be the top 10 tight end.
Because he's an actor.
Exactly. And old school is a classic, as we know.
Yes. I agree. So, you know, wasn't a terrible week, wasn't a great week. I'd say it was probably the worst of the three that we've had. But
yeah.
Let's like Steeler fans, let's move forward to week four.
Yes, let's keep fighting.
All right, Denny, give us your streaming defenses for week four.
All right. Well, I was really actually kind of blown away to learn this. The Chiefs, which are the highest scoring defense in fantasy football by a good margin, are owned in 1/3 of fantasy leagues. And that's on NFL.com and Yahoo. So, I mean, that's pretty remarkable. And they get the Giants at home in Kansas City this week. Now, the Giants, is someone actually, a Twitter follower mentioned this today, and I think this was a good point. The Giants may be in that position that the Browns were in last week, which is, what do we have to lose? We're 0-3. Our season is going down the tubes. Why not just, you know, just fling it everywhere? Just go for broke. And, you know, that could be an issue for the Chiefs. But I think the difference is that Minnesota's secondary is truly, truly horrendous. And the Chiefs' secondary is legitimately one of the best in the league. And we saw that against Philadelphia last Thursday. I don't think that you can beat this play. I would really prioritize the Chiefs if they're on your waiver wire, and they probably are. I would really prioritize them. They're the first overall defense. They have the top-ranked pass rush, the top-ranked pass coverage, and the eighth-ranked run defense. So there's not a glaring weakness in this defense, and the Giants are just a wreck, as everyone saw last week.
Yeah, and the Chiefs have played Dallas and Philly.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not as though that, you know, they've only faced the the Steelers.
Right. Well, I mean, I think that after their week one domination of Jacksonville, everyone was like, you know, me and 10 people from the neighborhood could dominate the Jags offense. But I think that they've proven to be a real life defense. And I'm kind of disappointed in a way, because I think that this means that Alex Smith's overall ceiling is probably capped pretty hard.
Yeah, it is.
You know,
for sure,
because he's not going to be in a position where he's down, you know, 21-0 at halftime. You know, so.
Yeah, and I think last week was the max Alex Smith kind of effort in a way. Let's pretend that he scored. He threw two touchdowns or converted some of those red zone opportunities, but that's still, you know, I don't see him getting over 20 points maybe at all this season. I mean, obviously he might do it a couple times, but I just don't see him, you know, being a top six quarterback or top 50% quarterback and start in 12 team leagues at all this year.
Yeah, and I know. I mean, I saw a lot of people, you know, on Twitter and other sites talking about how, I mean, it seemed like it was like in vogue to just crush Alex Smith. But I do think that he will be a fantasy viable, especially in deeper leagues where, you know, people are streaming quarterbacks. He's still going to throw a lot. He's not going to throw downfield. I mean, he made that very, very clear on Thursday. But I wouldn't write him off. It's just that having that defense is not the best thing for his fantasy value.
Yeah, I mean, that game was so frustrating. I mean, he just either dumped it off or threw to Donnie Avery on a 3rd and 15, and he converted.
Oh, I know.
It was unbelievable.
The Avery stuff was unbelievable. And I do have to say, I know JJ won't brag on himself, but he actually, and you can look it up on NumberFire, JJ mentioned Donnie Avery as a sneaky play on Thursday night. I think you mentioned it on Wednesday or Thursday.
Yeah. I do the start sit on Wednesdays.
Yeah.
Maybe sometimes Thursday mornings. Yeah. But yeah.
So,
obviously those kind of picks, you have some luck involved, but it wasn't as if it was just, you know, grabbed out of thin air.
Well, I mean, you base that on the number fire projection, which liked Donnie Avery's chances, right?
Yeah. So, you know, I take a look in that start sit column. I'll take a look at some of the odd rankings that come out or that appear odd, and then I'll dig into that player a little bit more, and then I'll see, wow, that really does make sense actually. And
right.
You know, there are a lot of them where, you know, I don't mention all of them in the column, but I did with Donnie Avery because it really made sense given the way, you know, the Eagles defense is built. So you know, it was just one of those picks for me. Unfortunately, the quarterback streamers didn't go that way.
Yeah, well, nice call there. And just to run down a couple more streaming defenses, the Colts jump out as one. They're in Jacksonville against an offense that has given up an average of 14.3 fantasy points per game to opposing defenses. That's a lot. The Jaguars are averaging 230 total yards of offense per game. Total yards. That's skewed probably, you know, from that Seattle debacle, which was very predictable. But the Colts looked pretty tough, you know, against the Niners, and I don't really see them relenting against that offense. I think that, and just to finish up here, the Titans play the Jets this week. I would stream both of these defenses. The Titans actually sport a top six pass defense. So this is going to be a situation where Geno Smith is just chucking it everywhere, and Stephen Hill and Santonio Holmes are going bananas like they did against Buffalo's pretty weak secondary. The Jets have the league's best run defense per Pro Football Focus, allowing less than 80 rushing yards per game. So, you know, I don't really see this as a great matchup for Chris Johnson. And I don't think that Jake Locker is going to have even, you know, anything close to the success that he had against that horrendous San Diego secondary. So it's the Titans, Jets, Colts, and the Chiefs this week for streaming.
Yeah, I like it. I like it a lot. Both the Jets and the Titans defenses have really, really looked good so far this year.
Yeah.
And it's exciting to see. You know, those are two defenses that, you know, because both teams were very good last year, they might have softer schedules this year against softer offenses, which just make them great defenses to play.
Yeah, exactly. And actually, that game has a really low over-under, which I'm looking for right now, which, you know, this is something I look for when I, 38.5. Yeah, 30.5. I mean, that is low, guys.
Yeah, yeah.
Anything below 40 is low. Anything below 39 is kind of crazy low. So Vegas is banking on this being a low-scoring affair.
Yeah. I like it. I like it a lot.
Yeah. You got quarterbacks here?
Yes, let's do some quarterback streamers. The first one, I'm going to go with probably the most obvious one out there, and that's Terrell Pryor against Washington. As long as he's healthy, of course. If Matt Flynn ends up playing because of Pryor's concussion that he suffered at the end of the Broncos game, you don't want to touch Matt Flynn. But, you know, if Pryor does end up playing, Washington's allowed 8 passing touchdowns in 3 games, including 480 passing and 385 passing in 2 consecutive weeks to Rodgers and Stafford, not to say that Pryor is either of them. And they only allowed 203 passing yards to Michael Vick because the Eagles got up early in that opening game, if you guys recall, which is why Vick didn't have to throw the ball to win. So I love Pryor this week. Washington, their defense is just dreadful. Pryor is showing us that he can throw the ball. He looked good against Denver last night.
Yeah. Yes.
And some of that coverage was not prevent defense either. There was a really nice play where he scrambled to the right and hit Rod Streeter with 3 defenders around Streeter. I mean, it was a beautiful pass. So, you know, I'm liking what I'm seeing out of Pryor. He's a high floor guy. He doesn't have to even score a touchdown to, you know, he won't lose your fantasy game if he doesn't throw a touchdown because he'll get you a potential 50 to 100 rushing yards.
Yeah.
So, you know, because of that, he's a great, great play, almost becoming an every week great play. And that's exciting to see.
Yeah, I agree. And just about Pryor, it was really good to see him succeed in the pocket, you know, as an actual real life quarterback rather than a guy who has to run for 60, 70, 80 yards to have fantasy value. I mean, the Broncos were not having any of that. I mean, they kept him in the pocket and Pryor looked like he knew what he was doing. You know, I think that those comparisons to Tebow are definitely way off base at this point.
Yeah. Totally. Another guy I have is Ben Roethlisberger against the Minnesota Vikings over in London. You know, obviously the Steelers got things going offensively a little bit last week or on Sunday night against the Bears. So, you know, there's a little hope for optimism with Roethlisberger. He did turn the ball over a lot, but that is the Bears defense. Again, but this is a Vikings defense that actually forces a lot of turnovers as well. So be prepared for, you know, maybe an interception and a fumble from Roethlisberger, which is becoming the norm for him. But, you know, Minnesota's defense has given up they gave up a 357 and two touchdown stat line to Stafford, a 292 and three touchdown to Cutler, and a 321 and three touchdown to Brian Hoyer.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to think that Ben is going to have a decent game through the air against Minnesota. They're really, really struggling. And I think it was evident after that opening game against Detroit, because Matthew Stafford could do whatever he only threw 43 times, I think. So, which is low for him.
Right.
But, you know, I do like Roethlisberger a lot this week. I think the Steelers finally do get their first win, hopefully. I probably just jinxed it, though. And I think that you could do a lot worse than Big Ben if you're streaming quarterbacks.
Absolutely.
And then my last one is actually the Steelers' opponent from last week, Jay Cutler. He's playing Detroit, and I understand that Detroit, actually, I think they ranked sixth against fantasy quarterbacks this year, so they haven't been that bad. But they've also played Christian Ponder, Carson Palmer, who's struggled, and that was the game that Fitzgerald was, was it the game that Fitzgerald was?
Yeah.
And then RG3, who he just didn't throw a touchdown during the game.
But he had 300 plus.
I think he had 326. And one thing that I want to point out about Cutler is he could be a potential 6-week streamer. He's got the Lions this week, and then the Saints, who I understand have been playing better, but it might be a game where, you know, he's got to keep up with that offense. The Giants, the Redskins, the Packers, and then the Lions again.
Yeah.
So those are six straight weeks of potential, you know, decent matchups where he's going to get, you know, up to 20 points a game, maybe in the 15 range consistently, which is great whenever you're talking about playing the waiver wire, maybe spending some free agent auction budget money. If you're worried about that, then Cutler's the guy to pick up this week, because not only does he have a decent matchup against the Lions, but he's got a decent matchup for five straight weeks after this one.
Yeah, I think that Cutler needs to be rostered in all 12-team leagues.
Yeah, I agree. He's played. I mean, you saw it against Pittsburgh on Sunday night. You know, he wasn't asked to throw the ball a whole lot because they got up so much early.
Mm-hmm.
They got way too conservative, which is why the Steelers were able to get back in that game. But you saw what he was able to do when he was called upon. How many times have we seen Jay Cutler do that? I mean, not only did he scramble on a third and long and get a first down, but then there was that third and short towards the end of the game where he just hit Brandon Marshall down the left side of the field. Well, the left side of the field from my angle. And I mean, he looked good.
Yeah.
He has looked great in Trestman's offense. This has been your boy, you know, for a while now, and it's great to see Cutler, who gets so much flack all the time, succeed, because I do love Jay Cutler.
Yeah, man, and Trestman we trust. That's all I was saying during that game. I mean, I know that he didn't finish with great numbers, but like you said, they kind of sat on the ball for the better part of two quarters. You know, Forte took the scores, and Michael Bush. You know, I think that the volume and the yardage will come. He's completing 68.5% of his passes over three games. I mean, that's probably not sustainable, but that's a lot higher than his than his career average. And I think that this offense is really suits him, and I think that it'll pay off fantasy wise over the next 3, 4, or 5 weeks.
Yeah, actually, I do want to mention that. When Earl Bennett scored that touchdown in the stadium, obviously the Bears fans were going nuts, but I stood up and sarcastically was screaming how they were roommates in college. Because we had Rich Rebar on, and I think we talked about that for 5 minutes. the fact that they were Earl Bennett was going to do well because he was roommates with Jay Cutler in college, because everyone says that every year.
Right, and that's what the announcers say. Well, you know, they have chemistry because they were in college. Yeah. All that means is that they got drunk together.
That's all it means. Maybe one of them peed the other's bed once. Right.
Exactly. They know what each other's vomit smells like. But that doesn't mean that Bennett is a legit receiver. Stop that.
Yeah, Earl Bennett only knows Jay Cutler's vodka of choice. He has no idea how to play wide receiver.
Oh, God, yeah. Oh, absolutely. He knows everything about Cutler's drinking habits, for sure.
Oh, yeah. And he's probably got some amazing stories.
Oh, once he gets run out of the league because he has no real talent, he should sell
reality
those.
Show.
He should sell those.
He should write a bathroom book. Bathroom reader.
I would
totally read stories of Jay Cutler in college. That's what the title is, by the way.
Oh man, I actually think that Ryan Forbes from Two Mugs would be really into that book.
Yeah, stories from Jay Cutler from college by Earl Bennett.
Oh man, I'm looking forward to it. Let's get this
done. Yeah, for sure. So those are the quarterbacks: Ben Roethlisberger, Terrell Pryor, Jay Cutler. If it goes anything like last week, you're going to get a high-end QB2 to mid QB2. So, but I'm hoping that you'll get a QB1 in there.
Mm-hmm.
So let's get to tight ends. Man, this is a quick podcast tonight. We're doing good.
It's flying by. Yes,
we're doing really well. So we got our tight ends. What we're going to do, since Denny and I were actually talking about this before the podcast started, but you know, we're not going to overdo it with the tight ends, just because we don't want to guide you guys the wrong way. We don't want to just throw a name out there just to have volume, just to have quantity. We want quality over quantity on this podcast. So since that's the case, we're just going to throw out guys that we see are meaningful, because right now the tight end situation is more of a cluster than not. So Denny, why don't you go with the first guy on your list?
Well, I think we both like Heath Miller this week. JJ, was it his first game back last week?
Yeah. I mean, and he did all right. I think he was targeted a few times. He had a couple catches, right?
He was targeted four times. He caught three balls for 35 yards. I was looking at his 2012 numbers, and, you know, not to say that, you know, he can definitely repeat these numbers, especially with the bulky knee. And there were some practice reports talking about how, he had a bit of a, what do they call it, a giddy up to his step.
Yeah.
That was a severe knee injury for a 31 or 2-year-old tight end. So, but I was looking at his 2012 numbers, and some encouraging things. He was targeted five or more times in 12 games last year. He caught 8 touchdowns, so he was a primary red zone threat, and he averaged 10 or more yards per catch in 11 games. So he was picking up, you know, chunks of yardage. He's not this, you know, Brandon Pettigrew type who you know, catches a 5-yard button hook and goes down immediately. He's going to get you. If he catches 3, 4, 5 balls, he's going to get you a nice chunk of yardage. Just a final point on Miller for this week. I really like 4-for-4's adjusted fantasy points allowed. So what they do is instead of just fantasy points allowed, they and you can check it out on their site, but they have a schedule adjusted fantasy points allowed, and basically it's an apples to apples comparison that you don't get by just looking at the raw numbers. And you can read more about that on their site. But anyway, the Vikings, who you know, Heath Miller plays this week, are the absolute worst in the league against tight ends, with adjusted fantasy points allowing 17.3 per game. I mean, that's a ton. So
yeah.
I'm not saying Miller is going to put 17 on the board, but you know, he has a real opportunity to be a tight end one this week.
Yeah, I mean, they've given up 6 touchdowns in 3 weeks of football to tight ends.
Right.
That's just absurd.
Yeah. So absolutely.
And Heath Miller is only owned in 7.6% of ESPN.com leagues, which I understand that's not necessarily completely factual, because I bet a lot of people didn't draft him, and then now they're not checking their teams. But I wouldn't expect Heath Miller to be owned in you know, he's definitely owned in less than 30 to 40% of leagues, I would assume.
Oh yeah, sure, sure. I mean, on Yahoo, he's averaged. I can't find it here. I think it was 10% or so.
Yeah, yeah. So makes sense.
He's not, you know, he's available. Let's put it that way. He's very available.
People forget how good he was last season in Todd Haley's offense. I mean, Todd Haley. Never mind. I'm not going down this route.
Not yet.
Not yet. You had one other guy.
Yeah,
right?
one of Kobe Fleener, who we mentioned last week, and we also mentioned that tight ends against the Niners are not exactly great. You know, great matchups, but. This week, he gets the Jaguars, and remember now that with Dwayne Allen, out for the year in Indianapolis, Kobe Fleener is going to, and has seen a spike in opportunity, in targets, in routes run. So beyond that good news, the Jaguars are allowing, 13.5 points, to tight ends per game, and that's according to the adjusted fantasy points from 4 for 4, which is fifth worst in the league. So there are only four teams worse than them against tight ends. Also, I looked on Pro Football Focus just to see how the Jaguars linebackers and safeties measure up for coverage purposes. Since you know that's probably who will be checking Miller on, I'm sorry, Fleener on Sunday, but the Jaguars linebackers are basically middle of the pack as far as coverage goes, and the Jaguars safeties are really quite awful. I mean, they're among the worst in coverage. So I think that Fleener has a real chance. The numbers really point to him. I'm not as confident with him as I am with Miller, I think, this week. But you could do a whole lot worse than Kobe Fleener for this week.
Yeah. So we're gonna keep it at those two this week. We got Heath Miller and Kobe Fleener. And again, I think that we're gonna get a better picture of how some of these tight ends are used as the season goes on. It's strange. Last week, there just weren't a lot of high tight end scores compared to the first 2 weeks of the season, which we saw record scores.
Yeah.
So it was really, really interesting week. So we'll see how that goes. So in essence, who are the defenses again?
Defenses, Chiefs, Colts, Jets, Titans.
Right, right. And then I had Roethlisberger, Terrell Pryor, and Jay Cutler.
Mm-hmm.
And then... Denny and I both liked Heath Miller, and then Denny threw in Kobe Fleener as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Those are the streamers for week four.
I will add about Fleener one more thing. The Jaguars have allowed 15 catches to tight ends over three games. So that's a pretty good indication that I think that offenses see a weakness in the coverage the coverage of tight ends. And Fleener, as he showed against Miami, is no joke when he gets an opportunity, and he actually was against Miami was a penalty away from catching another touchdown.
Yeah, right.
Which would have put him at like tight end two for the week.
Yeah. And the thing that I really wanted to, I wish, so Arizona's playing Tampa Bay. I really wish that they had tight ends to use.
Oh, me too. I know. I was thinking the same thing.
Because I'm looking at the schedule, and this is a perfect time for me to mention that, all right, so Jimmy Graham has been killing it, right? I mean, crushing it. He's been putting up record numbers, and people are sitting there. I got people tweeting at me today saying, well, didn't you tell us not to draft Jimmy Graham? Uh-huh. I said, no, I said that he was overdrafted. There's a big difference in that. So we have Jimmy Graham. So he played, he's played so far against Tampa Bay and Arizona. And I do want to mention that Arizona got torched by Jared Cook, week one. And then Tampa Bay gave up 8 receptions, 86 yards, and a touchdown to the Jets tight ends as well this season. And the reason that New England didn't do anything against Tampa Bay last week is because New England doesn't have a tight end. So, you know, the whole Jimmy Graham thing, you know, I totally expected him to be the number one tight end. I just do want to say that there is a possibility that some of those monster numbers had to do with matchup.
Oh, I think for sure. I mean, I actually look back at Graham's 2011 and 2012 seasons. Right now, he's averaging like 19.8 fantasy points per game in standard leagues. Now, that's incredible. That's an unbelievable pace. And I'd like I said on Twitter this morning, if he maintains that, if he finds a way to maintain that torrid pace, then I will gladly say that I was completely wrong on where he was drafted. And yes, he was a justifiable first round pick. But I think that the odds are severely stacked against him maintaining anything close to that pace. You know, and in fact, you know, last year I looked back and I saw that there were several three-game spans in which he averaged, you know, 16, 17, 18 points per game. And then there were other three-game spans in which he averaged 6 or 7 points per game. So I think that when he hits one of those lulls, and he will, I mean, because he's human and because, you know, he's not going to play these torchable defenses every single week like he has been, when he hits that lull, it will be it will be either difficult or impossible to get back to that pace that he's on right now, that first round justifiable pace. And so I think we can address this in 6 or 8 weeks, but I think that right now to say, hey, you know, I drafted him in the top 10 picks and I, you know, I won, I was right. I think it's very premature to say that.
Right. Right, exactly. And that's all the point I'm making. It has nothing to do with us thinking that Jimmy Graham is bad, because he is the best, potentially. I mean, Gronkowski, when he comes back, who knows? But he's the best plug-and-play tight end option out there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a fact. But it's also interesting that those who are taunting about Jimmy Graham are ignoring the fact that Jordan Cameron is 11 or so points behind him, yeah, fantasy-wise. So,
and
you know, Jordan Cameron's been unbelievable too, and so is Julius Thomas.
Mm-hmm. And what Cameron is tight end too, and he was drafted in the 10th round on average.
Yeah, 10th. I mean, I got him in the 11th or 12th in some drafts.
Yeah, I got Julius Thomas in the 13th in two of my drafts. So, you know, I mean that's the difference between a first round pick and a 12th or 13th round pick. I mean, I don't have to tell you guys that's a gigantic gap. Mm-hmm. And look, at that gap will widen between Graham and I would say Julius Thomas. I think that will obviously widen as the year goes on.
Right.
But you have to remember where you drafted them. You didn't, you know, no one besides Julius Thomas's cousins took him in the first round of drafts.
Oh yeah. And I don't even know if they did.
No. Well, if they did, they should be just punched in the neck, because that's ridiculous.
Right. Right. Exactly. So, I mean, I mean, Jimmy Graham's phenomenal. It's just, I just wanted to point that out before we moved on to our rants. I think that I'm first this week, am I?
I think you are, yes.
All right, well, this is going to be pretty quick. I don't have a voice right now because of Todd Haley. you know, I was such an apologist entering the season, and you know, Ben Roethlisberger had a very underrated year with Todd Haley last year, and you know, even though our running game didn't work out, it was because we didn't really have any running backs, which we still don't. But I'm getting to the point where it's not just the personnel, and it's the way that he's calling games for the Pittsburgh Steelers. He wants to stay committed to the run at the worst possible times in the game. You know, the Bengals game, first drive. Hey, let's not throw the ball. Let's give 3 straight plays to Felix Jones. 3rd down and 7. Let's run with Felix freaking Jones.
Good Lord.
So, I mean, and then against Chicago, okay, I get it that we're running well. I understand it. But it's as if you're watching a game and you know exactly what Todd Haley's thinking. He's sitting there and he sees Felix Jones bust an 11-yard run, and he says to himself, man, we can really run the ball against Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And then he just commits to the run for the rest of the game, to the point where Felix Jones fumbles the ball on the first drive to open the third quarter in a game that was close at that moment. And it's luckily the Steelers stayed in it. But imagine if something like that doesn't happen. You know, so it's also amazing that when the Steelers spread it out a bit, we see what Ben Roethlisberger can do throwing the football. You know, we saw Antonio Brown blow up. We saw that offense actually move the ball against a good defense on Sunday night. You know, I gave him the benefit of the doubt. I said that Todd Haley needed a second chance, but that is officially over. It is time to fire Todd Haley.
You're not the first person, I'm sure, to say that. I am shocked that Thomas Jones has not been rostered. But
I am too.
Steelers.
Unbelievable, huh?
Whew, man, that... you know, it's amazing. One or two good years in Arizona bought him a whole decade.
Bought him everything.
A whole decade of just forgiveness.
And he had Kurt Warner and Larry Fitzgerald.
And Anquan Boldin.
And a
really good offensive line that kept Warner upright.
Yeah, I mean, it really does blow my mind. And it is very, very difficult right now to be a Steeler fan.
Yeah, I really don't think Haley gets another shot after this. I mean, he's never going to be a head coach, but I don't even think he could be a coordinator. Who would hire him?
No, I agree. And I think the Steelers actually had a really interesting opportunity with Ken Wisenhunt being fired in Arizona to bring him back potentially this year and getting rid of Haley.
Yeah.
Not to say that they were just going to get rid of Haley after 1 year, but it would have been interesting to see, because Ken Wisenhunt was awesome when he was in Pittsburgh, and he got that job in Arizona, and that's when we hired Mike Tomlin. You know, and then Bruce Arians, I wasn't a huge fan of what he did because he doesn't fit his personnel necessarily, or he fits his personnel into his scheme rather than forming his scheme around his personnel, which is never a good thing, which is what we're seeing with Carson Palmer right now, who is constantly under duress.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I liked Bruce Arians, and then now it's just out of control. I mean, it's unbelievable to see what that Steelers offense is doing. I hope they can really turn around. I hope Le'Veon Bell is a reason why they can turn it around too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, he's supposed to play this week, right?
Yeah. I don't think he'll be, you know, a little fantasy nugget here. I don't think that he's going to see significant volume. And I think Jonathan Dwyer actually, you know, he played so well last week that, I mean, in comparison to the way that Steeler running backs are playing, that I think Dwyer is going to see an even bigger role potentially to let Le'Veon kind of slowly get into things. But I mean, he's playing this week, so hopefully something can come from that.
Right. My rant is will be very shorter than usual, and I will say this: when an elite quarterback goes off on a Sunday. I sometimes get tweets, you know, directed at me on Twitter, and sometimes I just see them where it's in so many words, it says, this is why you draft so-and-so, you know, and it'll be Aaron Rodgers, Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, Colin Kaepernick, you know, as they're going bananas. And so I will say that week three is a chance for, you know, for those of us who draft quarterbacks late or look for actual reliable value among quarterbacks, to say that this is why you don't draft quarterbacks early.
Yes.
And that this is a time for us to throw it back in the other direction, because just for an example, and this might make you throw up in your mouth a little bit, Geno Smith had more fantasy points in week three than RG3 and Aaron Rodgers combined.
Boom.
Boom. so end of podcast. No.
Yeah.
I mean, no, and look.
Mic drop.
This is not, I mean, if you really want to know about the strategy and why it's viable and you know, why it could save your fantasy soul, then read JJ's books. But this week was really, truly a great week for that argument, for that strategy, and I think that as the season goes on, as any season goes on, and we can accumulate statistics and trends and matchups, we can better identify streaming options. And it's, you know, it's difficult in the first couple weeks, first 2-3 weeks of the season. But like I said, I think that we learned a lot about which secondaries that we can exploit. And mm-hmm. I think that, you know, if this had been a little later in the year, I think that you and I and others might have pointed to Jake Locker and said, you know what, Locker is a really solid streaming play for this week. You know, maybe mm-hmm. if it was week 8 or week 12 or something like that, where we had a bunch of data to back it up, not just 2 weeks. So I think that we really have the advantage after 3 or 4 weeks of the season. And it's gonna show. I think that it really is gonna show in the real short term here. So just for all the tweeters out there who say, "Boom, this is why you draft Aaron Rodgers when he's throwing 3 touchdowns in the first half." You know, Geno Smith topped RG3 and Rodgers combined. That's
unbelievable.
Sort of blows my mind. Brian Hoyer was a top 12 quarterback. EJ Manuel was a top 12 quarterback this week. You know, Locker, Geno Smith, Christian Ponder was the 7th highest scoring quarterback in fantasy football this week. So, you know, that this was it was a fluky week on a lot of levels, but I don't think that that's fluky, and I think that you know, that it really is, it helps validate things after a few weeks in which elite quarterbacks have, you know, gone berserk. And look at Drew Brees went berserk this week, scored 31 points, led all quarterbacks. But you know, what price did you have to pay for Drew Brees?
And he hasn't done that throughout the season.
Right, and that's the question. I mean, he was not in the top 15 headed into week 3. And just remember the price that you paid. You didn't pay any price for Jake Locker. You paid no price. You paid $0 in equity. In
draft. I think he paid you.
He paid, right. He sent you a $12 check like your grandmother on your birthday.
On your 12th birthday.
And your 12th, yeah, and to say, you know, please play me in your fantasy league. Love, Jake.
Yeah, because Jake Locker loves 12th birthday.
So anyway, just remember the price you paid for your quarterback elitism. I'm done.
Yeah, and that's beautiful. And I you know, it's so interesting when people this goes back to the Graham thing. You know, we got our tight ends for free, and meanwhile, you know, there are plenty of Graham teams. I'm in my big league has Jimmy Graham, and he's 2-1. He's doing well, and his team sucks. But his team has done well the last 2 weeks because of Jimmy Graham. I totally get it. But at the same time, the instant Jimmy Graham has a bad game, which is bound to happen. If it doesn't happen, you can look at this date, this podcast, mm-hmm. September 24th, 2013, and say that I was completely wrong about Jimmy Graham.
Yeah,
but the instant he puts up 5 fantasy points is the instant that team might lose.
Right. Or, I mean, not 5, you know, even 8, you know.
Right.
I mean,
sure. To live up to some of the draft choices, that, you know, he was like the 6th pick in some drafts. That's absurd.
Right. I mean, look, if you got him in the 3rd round, that's fantastic for you.
Right.
I think that's you know, valuing him correctly. But, you know, you took him with a top 5 pick, and just wait. Let's just wait on it. 6 weeks, and I think that we'll have a case here.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, and you know, I will say this, that the people who jump out and declare wins, I don't know why I said winnings. this early on in the season, they're taking a giant risk by doing that.
Oh man, it's so early, and that's another thing with 0-3 fantasy teams. Just try to relax a little bit. I mean, you're in close to desperate straits, but not quite. So just hold tight.
I will say that I have one 0-3 team.
I do too. Yeah,
I have. It's in our boy Micah James Magic Formula League. I've lost 2 straight games by less than 5 points. And my team's horrible because it was a 16-team league, and I got Le'Veon in the late 2nd. Because it was we drafted like in early August, late July, or something.
No.
So it screwed me a little bit, but it's still. I mean, it's kind of, you know, I'm 0-3, but at the same time, you know, you can't panic because you know that people are going to take advantage of you.
Oh yeah, no. I mean, look, as you all know, I I have a lot of David Wilson stock, and I stopped playing him a couple weeks ago. So, you know, he's not killing me like he did in week one. But I've gotten, I would say, all together in all my leagues, I've gotten 15 trade offers for David Wilson over the past week. And, you know, because, you know, they're looking for, you know, desperation for panic. And I will not give in. I will not give in, not yet.
Yeah.
So don't sell your guys at rock bottom prices. You know, don't sell CJ Spiller at rock bottom price.
No, do not sell CJ Spiller. We talked about that on the Two Mugs pod just now. Now we're just throwing nuggets out there, Denny.
Oh, we are. Yes.
But CJ Spiller, we got to hit the hour at least. But CJ Spiller is a great, great buy low right now. I wrote an article about this. I do want to throw this out there. Fred Jackson right now is a 5.3 yards per carry, and he's on pace for 170 yards. Out of the 36, 32-year-old running backs that have ever had that volume in the NFL, only one of them have sustained a 5.0 yards per carry average or better.
Wow.
So the chance of Fred Jackson continuing this is not very high. Not only that, but CJ Spiller, if he were to continue playing that second half against the Jets, he would have seen about 20 touches. If you extrapolate his first three games, I know that it's extrapolation, whatever, but it's been pretty consistent. If you were to extrapolate his touches, he's up to about 280 carries this year.
Wow.
Which is 73 better than he had in 2012. So just because CJ Spiller isn't running for 95 yards per carry doesn't mean that he's not going to be fantasy relevant, because I guarantee his 3.6 yards per carry is going to jump up to 4 after one monster game. So don't, you know, just be patient with him.
Yeah. Well, basically the lesson is, if you have a guy who's at the bottom of his fantasy value, fantasy price at the moment, now is not the time to sell. Right. You will regret it later on.
Right. Like, you know, Roddy White, Rob Gronkowski, who hasn't played yet. If you trade him now, what are you doing?
Yeah.
You've just stashed him on your bench for 3 weeks, and you're going to trade him right when he's about to play?
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't make any sense. You got to play it smart. You got to understand, you know, you have to understand that there, in fantasy football, there are sunk costs at some point where, you know, just because CJ Spiller isn't living up to his top five pick status, or Arian Foster, doesn't mean that you should give him away because he hasn't hit that. It's not as though that cost that you paid is gone. It's sunk. It's finished. You have to have new expectations for players each week as you move forward in a season.
Yes. Yeah, well said. Absolutely.
Man, we've been just like ranting for the past 10 minutes.
Yeah, I know. It's all blurred together right now. I'm drunk on ranting.
Yeah, man. Oh man. All right. Well, I think that's good. Where can everyone find you, Denny?
They can find me at CDCarter13 on Twitter. I have my defensive streaming column on thefakefootball.com. I have my quarterback streaming column on 4for4.com, and using their really cool little tools, I suggest you check it out. And I have a bunch of stuff on xnsports.com, including tight end streaming and my daily fantasy column, which, if I may brag for a second, was pretty good last week. Turned out pretty well. I think I could have made you a little cash money. And the advice is free.
Oh man!
So
unbelievable. And but you have a book as well.
Oh, I do. I do. Yes. It's called How to Think Like a Fantasy Football Winner, and it really does have in season use. In fact, I had a few really nice tweets after week three, saying, you know, I'm having a tough time dealing with these psychological aspects of fantasy football, and so I went back and read parts of your book, chapters of your book, and it really helped me out. So I'm really happy to hear that, and I've done that myself. Because I'm an egomaniac and I read my own writing all the time, and B, because I actually needed reminders. You know, I needed a reminder that the short term. Can be determined by kind of flukiness and luck, but that if you make solid decisions long term, that you will win and win consistently, and that's something I kind of rant and rave about in the book.
Yeah, your book is definitely much more an in-season read than mine is, for sure. You know, you can get a lot of good information about how to deal with the struggles that you're going to encounter as you move through the season.
Right, the inevitable struggles. Everybody deals with, you know, no one cruises through a season. I mean, very few people cruise through a season and never hit a rough patch, never hit an injury rough patch, or just bad luck, losing by one or two here or there, like you said that you did in the Magic Man League. So you know, I it's a good read, and it's good to remind yourself that decision making should be the key to everything, not the results.
Yeah, exactly. All right, well, I am JJ Zacharyson. You can find me on Twitter at LateRoundQB. On numberfire.com, lots of content always going on over there. And obviously lateroundqb.com, where our buddy Phil Culbertson's been running the show quite well over there as well. So check that out. Yeah, that's it. Hopefully this time, I'm not gonna jinx any tight end at the end of this podcast. I did it with Jordan Reed and then Tyler Eifert.
Don't do it.
But no, not doing it. Go Heath Miller and Kobe Fleener.
Yay.
All right, guys, thanks for listening. See you next week.
Thank you for listening to Living the Stream. We hope you enjoyed the internet podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on iTunes now. It won't take long. It's fast. For more fantasy football info, check out LateRoundQB.com. Hope you come back soon as we share about the team.